We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. All right, friends, before we get started, I wanted to let you know about a free online workshop that I'm doing on September 20th. I'm going to help you determine whether wholesale is right for you. I know this is a big question mark that a lot of you have, and so I'm going to walk you through 12 questions that I want you to ask yourself before you make that leap into wholesale. If you'd like to join me, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com/wholesale to register for this free online workshop. Hi friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. Today I sat down with Danielle Spurge. Danielle is a maker and a craft business consultant who loves iced lattes and pop music. Through her work at the Meriwether Council, Danielle teaches creative people how to turn their crafty tendencies into profits. On her blog, and she also has a podcast, Danielle aims to inspire and support makers in business, and she shares insight from her 8 years of experience selling handmade work online. Danielle believes in celebrating the reality of gainful self-employment through craft and wants to help more artists, crafters, and designers share their work with more confidence. On today's episode, we talk about Danielle's journey of starting her business, how she manages both a product and a service-based business, and she shares why Etsy is a great platform for makers. Hey, Danielle, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a real treat to be here with you.
It's a treat to have you. I feel like our audience is really going to enjoy all that you have to share today. Before we dive into some Etsy stuff, I would love for you to tell us about your business, the Meriwether Council. How did you get started in this?
I started my business pretty much immediately after I graduated college. I was supposed to go to graduate school and I decided not to. And so I didn't really have any other plans. And I had always been really interested in, you know, the maker economy and like seeing what people were doing and selling. And I was going to college in Boston, which has a very vibrant arts and crafts scene. Mm-hmm. And so it was very prevalent in my life at that time to see people doing this. And so I was like, I want to try that. And so because I had no real plans at the time, I decided to start my business selling. It was a variety of things when I first started for the first little while, but primarily custom hand embroidery.
Okay.
And I did like a bunch of craft fairs in Boston, and I got started on Etsy, and things really just progressed kind of naturally, I guess. You know, I was really, really dedicated to like figuring it out and things.
Did you know at that point though that like, okay, I'm going to try to make this work, or were you still looking for a regular job in the process? Like,
oh no, whoa. I just decided this was what I wanted.
You were all
to
in.
Yeah, I was like all in.
Okay.
You know, I think my parents kind of felt bad for me that my grad school thing kind of fell through. So they were like supporting me a little bit too. But, you know, in the first like year, it was a lot of just real like struggle to figure out what am I doing? Well, you know, all these moments of like panic and doubt and stuff. But then things really started to sort of like settle, and I felt more secure in what I was doing and selling on Etsy and got my own site up and running. And it was really awesome to be able to make things and then people liked them and wanted to spend money on them.
What were your favorite types of materials to work with and products to make? What were you selling in your initial Etsy shop? Was it a variety of things or?
Yeah, at very, very first, I was selling embroidered pieces and some like sewn pieces.
Okay.
But pretty quickly, I was like, I really only like to do embroidery.
Okay.
Not that I don't like sewing, but I just wanted to focus on the embroidery. So I was making a lot of pieces with words on them. Like really, my emphasis has always been on like hand-drawn letters and words and letter forms and stuff like that. And then really, you know, just love fabric, love embroidery floss. I love to cut things up and sew them back together. anything really colorful and soft materials. I hate drawing. I hate painting. So I really like dry and soft materials. So embroidery is perfect for me. And I really got into selling my pieces finished in, you know, embroidery hoops. It's really popular now. But at the time, it was really like only a few people were doing that. And so people even didn't really understand it fully yet, that you could like hang these on the wall.
Well, isn't it funny at the beginning when you have to explain what you're doing and how it can be used, and there's that whole educational curve with your customers as to what it is?
Yes, it's kind of funny. Like the things, I mean, everybody who's ever done an in-person event knows the ridiculous things that people will say to you or ask you. But people would be like, are these pot holders or trivets? And I'm like, no, they're hanging on a wall. Like, why would you hang a trivet on the wall? Like, you know, just like weird, weird commentary. But over time, you know, people caught on. And then because I was doing a lot of words, stitched words, people started asking me to do monograms and letters, initials. Mm-hmm. And that's really where I found a very marketable product in putting initials on things. I love that because I don't have a lot of patience for giant projects. Like I like to be able to sit and finish something and it's over.
Yeah.
Like I love that like instant gratification. So it was great for me to be like, I can make this custom piece that someone really wants and it doesn't take forever.
Yeah.
So that was like ideal. And that's where things really started to trend up for me is when I got into my initial necklaces and things like that. And I was able to produce a lot of them because they didn't take that long and people really liked them. They had a lot of marketability because they were personalized and mm-hmm. colorful.
But yeah, it's still mass market because if it's just an initial, it's not like somebody's name or their three initials, for example. You know, it's like one letter. So
yeah. So I was able to sell them like at shows. You know, obviously you couldn't design your own at that stage, but I could have a lot of what I knew people tended to like. Popular initials, whatever. So that was really like one of the turning points for me. And then as my business started to get more like well known or like, you know, trend up in that direction, I had a lot of people asking me. I don't know if you are familiar with this, but like 6-ish years ago, 7 years ago, Etsy teams were really like a hot thing and everybody was like getting together to make these treasuries for Etsy. And there was a lot of camaraderie in the community around teams. And I had a lot of people on the teams asking, you know, how are you getting this attention for your products? And I found myself just like love to talk shop with people about their business, my business, other people's business. I don't care what you talk about, any kind of business you want. And, you know, so I was doing a lot of that, but like really disjointed, fragmented doing that. And so I started blogging about it, you know, the business side of what I was doing.
Yep.
And then it kind of started to snowball from there too, with the more like service-based side of the business.
Yeah, you did a shift a little bit because now you have a whole community of makers that you support. And tell us about that side of your business.
Yeah. So as I was getting really into, you know, talking with other people about their business, and it was really necessary for me too. I felt like it was so awesome to not be just like singular me in my studio doing my stuff. And it was nice to have other humans that I was able to influence or help them. And so I really wanted to focus on doing more of that. And like I said, it was so fragmented and disjointed the way I was doing, like talk to one person, talk to another person. So as I decided, you know, I really want to put more effort into this part of the business. A lot of it too was because when I started, I didn't have somebody I knew to kind of ask or rely on for relevant information or whatever.
Yeah, I can really totally 100% relate. I mean, that's ultimately how bootcamp started too.
Yeah.
I had my product-based business and I was trying to learn as I went, and I love talking shop with other creatives in my field. And, you know, it was fragmented and kind of kind of as we went. And then we kind of I formalized it a little more, and we, you know, it's grown since. But, you know, I know firsthand how difficult it can be to run a manufacturing business while also building a community of people that you support. And, you know, your love for both is there completely.
Yeah.
But yet logistically, it's difficult. So how do you split your time and give both sides of your business the attention that they need and deserve?
Yeah, it is hard. It's essentially two completely different businesses, which anybody who has ever done any kind of ideal customer avatar exercise knows or can understand. Like the people who are buying your products or my products, completely different people than are buying my services, right? Or yep. like a course or something. So it was, you know, at first I was like, this is awesome. Best of both worlds. I can do everything. And then I'm like, can't really do everything super well. So let me just do one thing super well for a while, build yeah. this up and get this going. And then, you know, we'll see what happens. So I'm at the point now where I like really want to get back to focusing more on my products. And okay. so like the past like 2 years, it's really been like a 90% effort in the one direction.
The service
there's
side.
There's no way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's really no way for me to do like 50-50. So I'm just trying to be like, okay, let me do. But I've always been happy with the amount of like product work I was doing because it fit really well into the amount of other work mm-hmm. I was doing. It wasn't like overwhelming or whatever. And, you know, especially with Etsy or, you know, your own site with your products, if you're not doing a ton of wholesale or, you know, you have all these other accounts, you can kind of throttle like how much you're producing. Like you have a lot of control over like what are yeah. you offering. So that's helpful.
Yeah, I feel like you can toggle it up or toggle it down, right? Like yeah, you can kind yeah. of shift your head to one side or the other. I found just in my own experience, like I got to a point where we were selling wholesale, we were selling retail, and I either needed to bring on more people, like more mm-hmm. bodies to physically get things out the door, or yeah. I needed to scale back. And that's where I ultimately decided at the end of 2016, like, okay, like I'm going to just do licensing on the product side and focus on what we're doing in bootcamp because it really excites me and I just love what we're doing. But yeah. to your point, I love the creative. I love the yeah. design. I love that part too, but you know, it's difficult to manage both. So major kudos to you for it's one, hard. Like doing both and two, knowing yourself well enough and knowing your business well enough to where you can throttle up and throttle down depending on which season you want to focus on, which thing you want to focus on and season of life you're in.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I'm trying to do now is find more balance for the both. I know it's never going to be even, but yeah. I want to be the person who makes my products. Like I want to make them to, you know, however many I want to make of them. And then whatever amount that is fine. Like I just yeah. want to like be like zen about that. And
it sounds so freeing. I mean, just the idea of, yeah, I can make, you know, 50 of something if I want to. Yeah. And then I can try something new, which is really cool too.
And I feel like that gives me, it helps me like I always wanted to maintain my product business because it helps me relate to my students. Like I wouldn't feel yeah. right about being like, I don't know what's happening right now because I'm not yeah. doing it. Like that would be ridiculous. So I've always maintained my shop and my business, you know, to different effort levels over time, but it's always been there. I fill orders throughout the year in my embroidery business. And I just want to do, you know, more of that, not a exponentially larger amount of that, but more yeah. of it. So
okay, so this is really interesting to me too because we've been having a lot of conversations in our alumni forum about – there's one in particular that's coming to mind about – there's so much talk in the internet, and I'm sure you hear this in your own community, about scaling and growth
yeah.
and like making more money and creating more yeah. product and you know, all of that. But there's a lot to be said for keeping it small and nimble and being able to try different yeah. things and pivot as we see. And so it's really – gratifying to me to hear you talking about I want my hands in everything and yeah. I want to do it and do it the best of my ability. And so I don't know, thank you for sharing that because I think it's important in this time of everyone talking about growth and scaling
yeah.
and bigger,
know.
better, know. You know, like all that, like I think it's important. And not that you're saying you want to stay small or anything like that, but like this, we can provide better service, we can create a better product when we are more thoughtful.
Yeah. And you know, none of my students, as far as I know, I mean, I don't have like one-to-one relationships with every single one of them, but as far as I know, none of my students are trying to like break seven figures on Etsy every year. Like they just want to hit a certain amount yeah. per month and like maintain it, you know?
Yeah.
Or they want yeah. to hit a certain amount in a 5 month span and then put their shop on vacation. Like that's what they want. They just want to do what they're doing a little bit better than they're currently doing it to get where they want to go with either more ease, more intention, or faster. We're not trying to, like, love you it. Know, break any ceilings here or, like, break any records. Like, most of my people, they just want – they want what I want, which is to be hands-on and make the products. They don't want to get to a point where they have to bring in, you know, five other people throughout the year to help them make their products. Some of them have, you know, one or two people who work with them in various capacities. But most of my people want to be the person who is – the creative person and have, you know, the majority of the hand in making things. So it's not possible to be like a seven-figure business. And that's fine.
No,
most of us don't want the stress of a seven-figure business. That's a whole other ball game. Those are not, that's not my people at all. So
no, I agree with you. And it's frankly, that's not the bulk of our people either. But, you know, we do want to work smarter in our businesses and streamline where we can and, you know, make sure that we're making the effort that we're putting forward, you know, leveraging that as best we can. Because, you know, it takes a lot to run a business.
It does.
And we have a lot of hats that we wear.
Yeah, for sure.
So tell me, speaking of your community, tell us what type of makers are involved in your community and what type of help do you provide them?
Yeah, so my community is mostly, like I said, makers. Like, we do have some 2D artists, fine artists, but mostly it's people who are making utilitarian products, jewelry, bags, etc.
Nice.
And they, most people come to me because they're, the thing that attracts people to me, I guess, is like they hear about me from some kind of Etsy thing first, and then I sort of help them see the potential of Etsy that they, you know, refine what they already know about Etsy to be beneficial for them, see the bigger picture of Etsy, and then see the bigger picture of their business as it can exist on and beyond Etsy.
That's awesome.
So my people, they come to me and I try to help them leverage the power of Etsy and then think, you know, okay, let's get Etsy up and running so that it's doing a lot of work for us. And then we can free up some of that work time that we were normally spending ourselves and promote this product on our own website or in other ways. Because my thing is like, let's never send our hard-earned traffic to Etsy because that traffic is going to disperse. There's no guarantee that that traffic is going to stay with you. So I want all of, you know, if I'm helping you earn this traffic that you've like hustled really hard for with Instagram or whatever.
Yeah.
Interest. I want that traffic to go to you where it's just you're the star of the show. I want your Etsy to refer traffic to you from within Etsy all the time. And you, the work that you are putting out there, your marketing efforts, especially your paid marketing efforts, send them to your own website. But of course, you have to, you know, get to the point where you have that website and understand the purpose and the benefit of having that website first. So we start kind of like with Etsy and then
totally
sort of crack you open.
Well, let's go back to that. So like for somebody that's brand new to business, I mean, we've got people of all levels listening to this podcast. We even have service-based people listen to this podcast. So like, but let's go back to the very beginning. Like if somebody's just starting out, why is Etsy a good option for them?
Yeah. So
to get their products out to market.
I will like never shut up about this until it's not true anymore. Etsy is like the best tool. We are so lucky. I think people even don't realize how much Etsy has influenced just the commonplaceness of makers in the grand scheme of things. And the availability and desire for those kind of products, even if you're not even using Etsy, you probably, you know, have benefited from it in some way. But I always want people to start on Etsy, or I say, yes, that's a great place to start because it's got so much built into it already, from traffic to features to, you know, it's pretty easy to use. It's easy to get started, low budget. Mm-hmm. You don't really need, I mean, you can get a link for like 40 free listings or something when you open your shop. So it doesn't even really cost anything to list,
you know.
So you can get started with just a few products, very low barrier of entry. It doesn't even allow you to actually open your shop until you've filled out everything you need to fill out. You know, you might not fill it out the best way possible, but at least it's there. You know, it makes it so you've got everything you need in order to get started.
You know, it's been several years since I've sold on Etsy. I started there in 2008, and so much has changed.
Yes.
You know, I guess my question is, how can makers ensure that their products are being seen? Is it most important to have, like, tags or good descriptions? Like, I don't know. I feel like the rules are constantly shifting. Teams used to be a thing, and relisting frequently used to be a thing. Like, I don't know. Are the, like, now I hear more about tags and good descriptions, and, you know, what's, in your opinion, the best way to be seen?
So, like, the thing about Etsy is you can appeal to its systems to get seen. In for those systems, it's really like SEO based and sort of like trend based, or use it like taking in the clues that they give you from like their merchandising reports, their trend reports, and really like trying to align your products to those trends. And that doesn't mean change what you're selling to be trendy. That just means like if they're really hot on a certain color right now and you have an item in your shop that is that color, but you've been calling it something else, let's update it. So now you're calling it whatever they're calling it, you know, like simple like alignments of things that can be really helpful with visibility.
That's so smart.
And then, yes, SEO. Obviously, I think people get really anxious about SEO and kind of forget that everything we do on the internet is constantly like being tweaked. Algorithms are constantly being tweaked. But like Etsy will eventually change the way that their search results come into play. Mm-hmm. But Etsy is smart enough, I believe, to not completely overhaul that without telling anyone.
Yeah.
Because then their search results would be, if their search results depend on seller input to function properly and they don't tell sellers how to appeal to it, their search results won't be very good and people will stop coming to their site. So they know they're going to go belly up if they don't tell people when something important changes.
Right.
So my theory is that, you know, right, well, this is not a theory. This is fact that right now, as it stands today, Etsy cares about your titles and your tags and all the little things you fill in as you're listing, like your little, they're called attributes. Mm-hmm. All these little check boxes and little menus that you select things from. That's what it cares about for SEO. And then, well, that's the stuff you have control over, at least. There's other things that infiltrate, you know, or influence how something would perform, but we don't have control over any of them. Like, how often does something get purchased? How often does somebody, you know, all these different things we don't have control over. So the things that people can participate in, they should. And the rest of it, they just kind of have to like use the rest of their shop to bolster clickability. Because like, what is the point of ranking really well if nobody wants to click into your listing?
Yeah.
So your photos still have to be really good. And your descriptions have to help people understand your product. And your photos have to help people understand your product. So there's no like cutoff, like, oh, that doesn't count for SEO, or, oh, that's not important. It's all important, you know?
Yeah.
It's all going to play together. And that's really the beauty, though, of Etsy, is that you can do this little song and dance to help your shop, you know, get in front of this traffic that's coming to Etsy every single day, whether you tried for it or not.
Right.
And that traffic is all people who are like, you know, they're on this e-commerce platform. They're looking for things to buy, which I think people get. They forget that and they focus on things like Instagram and Facebook, and they're constantly pushing links out to their products. And it's like, but no one goes on Instagram with the intent to buy something the way that people go on Etsy with the intent to buy something. So that's really why I think Etsy is such a useful tool for a new seller, because people are going there looking to buy things. And they're the kind of people who want to buy the kind of products that you are selling.
Totally.
And Etsy does a really good job of promoting sellers through editors' picks and their blog and Pinterest and Instagram. Like, all of Etsy's content pretty much comes from its sellers.
Do you have to submit for that kind of stuff, or do they cherry pick?
No, they, for by and large, you know, the stuff you see on Etsy's Facebook or Instagram is, you know, I think sometimes they do ask you, like, do you mind if we share this? If it's something from your actual Instagram, if they see it. But, like, they just feature Etsy products, like, all the time. Like, that is their game plan on their blog, in their reports, constantly, you know, putting out content that links to sellers. And that's all free and awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And but to your point, too, it's out of control, out of your control. So it's difficult.
It is out of your control, like whether or not you would get selected for something. But you can put certain things into place that would make it more likely that you would appeal to that sort of a feature or be more likely to get picked up for being featured.
Could you give us an example of what one of those things might be?
Well, first, I think a lot of this comes down to the photographs because they're not going to feature something that doesn't look nice. You know, it's their front page, it's their presentation. So the photographs, I think, are huge. And then also, like I said, aligning to what they kind of have identified as like, we care about these things. You know, they're constantly putting blog posts up like, these are the newest trends for interiors, or these are the newest trends for whatever season. And if you have items that kind of play into that, you should definitely emphasize those and put them in a position to be picked up.
What is a common mistake? And maybe it's one of these things we just talked about. What's a common mistake that people are making on Etsy? Is it something like terrible photos that aren't bright enough or don't describe what the product is? Or is it something else?
I definitely think that, yes, having bad photos would be a mistake. But I think the biggest mistake I see people make is that they just don't list enough. They put like 5 items in their shop and they're like, why isn't anyone looking at them? And Etsy is really a numbers game. The more listings you have, the better your chances are of showing up and being found and being seen and making sales, right?
Right.
So one thing that, you know, to piggyback on that, not just for visibility, having a lot of listings is helpful, but people are always like, I'm not making the kind of money I want to make. And then I look at their shop and I'm like, well, even if you sold everything in the shop, you'd only make $100. So you don't have enough product here to make the kind of money you want to make. So you need to sort of be realistic about your goal and what you're producing and what you can produce. You know, that I think is the most discouraging thing to people, is they're just not thinking about it realistically. So they're like, I listed 5 things, I've made no sales, I'll never be a millionaire at this rate, you know? And it's like, well, yes, you need, you know, these could be the 5 greatest products in the world, but if you only have 5 of them, then you can only sell 5 of them. So you have to have a plan for replenishing your inventory.
Yeah. I love that you said that, because even on the wholesale side, you know, I talk with a lot of people that don't have enough product, and I tell them the same exact thing. A buyer is not going to buy every single thing that you offer.
Right.
And so you need enough of variety that people can pick and choose and still place a significant order. Now, obviously, wholesale versus retail is very different in terms of minimums and things like that. Retail, you can just buy one off. But that's a really great point, that even regardless of if you're selling wholesale, if you're just selling retail, you still need variety. You still need a deeper breadth of your line, whether it's multiple product categories or just more variety within a certain product category.
I think people forget that they themselves are consumers, and that gives them a lot of potential insight.
Yeah.
Like we all have this experience as a consumer that we can use to help us be better sellers. And like, if you walked into a brick and mortar store that only had 5 things, you would be like, oh, this place isn't even open yet, I'm leaving, you know? So like, you have to remember your own consumer self sometimes.
That's a great analogy. I appreciate you sharing that, because it's absolutely true. So, you know, Etsy has been making a lot of changes to their platform recently. They discontinued Etsy wholesale. They changed some of their pricing structure. What are your thoughts on all these changes, and what does it mean for the maker community?
I think that a lot of the changes ultimately that Etsy has always made over time that people at first were like not sure about have turned out really well.
Okay.
In the long run. And I think the price increase for me, that was not really that big of a deal. I feel like Etsy deserves to raise their price once every 15 years. And their fee structure has never changed since its inception.
Oh, wow. So I didn't realize that.
13 years, they've not changed their fee structure or essentially their pricing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they've added in things that make them money, like promoted listings or shipping, whatever, processing. But, you know, that base fee has never changed. So I think from, you know, as business people, we can kind of understand, okay, that's fine. Etsy needs to raise their prices sometimes. And right. I think people were upset because they're like, well, they can raise their price, but they should do more for us if that's the case. But I think Etsy's already doing so much for us that we don't even realize, mm-hmm. you know, and they just have to support those efforts, you know, just like how any of us would raise our prices and not necessarily make this gigantic change to say this is why.
Right.
Just, well, you know, and, things
and,
change.
And to your point, too, like, you know, the cost of doing business rises over time. Right. There's different right. things that we absorb as business owners, and we need to work that into our pricing. So, yes, I mean,
it's still one of the cheapest ways that you can sell online. Like Amazon's fees are more. If you had your own website, you know, upfront, it's more. So well,
yeah, and your own website. I mean, people are building beautiful sites that are so on brand and such a great, you know, portfolio of their work and great user experience. But at the same time, mm-hmm. they have to get the traffic there. They have to bring the customers to, like, just because you build it doesn't mean they'll come. Whereas
right.
a little bit with Etsy, they have the built-in audience. So there is that benefit there.
Yeah. And what was the other, like, most biggest or the most major change that they, the one that you mentioned? They
raised Etsy Wholesale and then the pricing structure yes. were the two I mentioned.
Yeah. Etsy Wholesale. I think they kind of just let that atrophy. They probably could have done more with it. I don't know why they didn't.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was pretty cool for the people who were using it. I don't really know too much about why. I'm assuming it just wasn't, like, in their interest anymore, or it wasn't profitable for them in some way.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I think for me, that was a change that helped people remember, like, oh yeah, I need to stand on my own two feet as well, which is something that I always try to encourage people to think about. Like, what if this goes away?
Yeah.
What if we no longer have this option?
And that's true of anything, right? Like social, we just, you know, people yeah. complain about the algorithms on Instagram or other things like this. Well, you don't own those platforms. They're not yours. Like, we're just kind of borrowing space on them to talk to our people. But
yeah.
So building your own email list, building your own website, you know, ensuring that you're getting the word out about your products if in your own way, on your own platforms, like, that's definitely where you want to try to focus on most. But, you know, these are yeah. there are other tools out there that we're leveraging and are doing well for our businesses. But you, to your point, we need to keep in mind that, like,
yeah,
we're just kind of borrowing space right now there.
I think too, because people over time have said things like, oh, I wish Etsy would get back to, you know, focusing more on their makers, like their real makers, and get back to basics. And it's like, okay, well, now they're sort of paring things down, maybe in an effort to do that. Like, let's not complain when they do things that yeah, we kind of ask see where them it to goes. Do, you know? So
yeah, I haven't been on Etsy in a very long time in terms as a seller. So it's been interesting for me to hear you talk about the changes and how it's working. I really appreciate you doing that. Shifting gears a little bit, what inspires you when you're creating new products for your shop or you're coming up with new programs for your community?
When I'm creating new products, I feel very inspired by like different imagery. I really love like collage. And like I said, I love to cut things up and put them back together, which is basically exactly what collage is. So I love using like vintage imagery in my work and mixing words with images and that kind of thing and playing with textures. And this is what I'm trying to get back into, get to do more of this kind of stuff. And really, of course, color too. So like mixing colors with words and images is really where my sweet spot is with dry materials. Mm-hmm. And when I'm thinking up things to do with my students, this is like exactly where I'm at right now. It's like I'm trying to help them do what they want to do better on their own. Like I don't want to just like turn out little like Meriwether protégés. I want to help people be who they want to be. So I feel like right now I'm sort of in this place where I'm sort of paring down what I'm offering in terms of like you just pop in and access it and, you know, you read it and you do what it says. I want to do more like helping people sort of in a communicative way do what they want to do and build their business the way they want to build it, just do that in a smarter way or a more strategic way. So that's kind of what we do in my membership, which is called the Council. And I love seeing people work together too, and working with people, not just having people. I mean, there's definitely value in people like come and take my course and they do what I have advised them to do. But I really enjoy also just working directly with people. So like I said, I'm not trying to churn out little Meriwethers. I want there to be more people who are doing what they want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And every business is different, right? Like everyone's definition of success is different. Everyone's goals are different. The path in which we get there is different. So
yeah,
you know, it's been interesting too as I've grown Tricia Bootcamp of like, I can give the same content to hundreds of people. And I always preface it by saying, you're going to take this and do something completely different with it than the person sitting next to you or, you know, taking the course with you online. And I love that because I want you to take the nuggets that are going to be most effective for your company and do those things.
Right.
Do those things. This is not a step-by-step playbook that you have to follow. This is take what works for you, run with it. So it's really enlightening for me to hear you say similar things because that's what we need to be doing as leaders of these communities and educators. So
yeah, like there's definitely something to be said about having like a framework, right? Like people come, mm-hmm. they take my Etsy course, they have this framework for how to use Etsy and like how to make the most of Etsy and all these different things you can do and think about. But then like, okay, once you do that, now what? Like now let's talk, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's definitely something to be said about like frameworks and processes. And there's certain things like you should do no matter what. Like, yes, that is the right answer. But then there are other times where it's like, okay, maybe this isn't the right answer for you, but it is for this person. So let's figure out what your right answer is going to be.
Yep.
And that's where I really love to sort of dig in with people. So that's what I'm trying to do more of now too.
Excellent. Well, where can people find you online to learn more about these services you offer and the products that you sell?
Everything can be found at meriwethercouncil.com, and I can be located at meriwetherc on Instagram, and I will send you, if you want to share with them, a link where they can take this free Etsy series I have. It's an email series, just like one lesson a day for a week about leveraging Etsy and understanding that power that's in there, and
that would be great,
drilling it out for yourself.
That would be awesome. You guys, we will include all of those links and more in the show notes so you can check those out. And Danielle, thank you so much for joining me today. This was really fun to talk to somebody else that does similar things that I do and you know, is in the same sphere. So thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, friends, many of you are in the process of contemplating whether wholesale is the right next step for your business. And guys, I get it. I know that it feels like a big, scary decision, and there are lots of things that you're probably considering. And that's why I'm offering a free online workshop to help you determine, is wholesale right for me? I'll walk you through 12 questions that I want you to ask yourself before you make that leap into wholesale. And I'll also explain why each of those questions is super important. The free workshop will take place on Thursday, September 20th at noon Pacific, and space will be limited. To grab your seat, head to tradeshowcamp.com/wholesale to register. And also so you know, a replay will be available to everyone that registers ahead of time. So again, register at tradeshowcamp.com/wholesale. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.